You can help CFRC keep our listeners informed on issues that matter with modernized broadcasting equipment and trained team members. Help CFRC raise $25,000 this year and make your gift today via CFRC.ca. Don't forget to tune in for daily news programming and subscribe to our news podcasts to keep up with the latest in your community.
Hey, this is Nate Bright, co-produce some of this year's CFRC live sessions and release rating reels on Instagram. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFRC's annual funding drive is running until December 31st, and your gift is needed to help us provide local musicians with modern top-of-the-line equipment, space, and technical support to better showcase their creativity on our airwaves all year round. Help us raise $25,000 this year. Make your gift today via CFRC.ca.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? This is Sam Borman from CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm a second-year media and political studies student, and my favorite part about CFRC is the freedom that they allow me to really play whatever I want, and the community, and how helpful everyone that volunteers and works here is. If you want to hear more from me, I have a show called Punk is Dead on Monday nights at 10 p.m., and our funding drive runs from November to December 31st. Donations can be made at CFRC.ca. Thank you for all the support you've given CFRC 101.9 FM.
The following program is an all-language show which includes open discussions on topics related to the LGBTQ plus community and beyond, including, but not limited to, mature subject matters such as sex and sexuality, personal experiences, and more. We aim to create a respectful and inclusive space for all. Listener discretion is advised. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the producers and this outlet. Stay tuned for thought-provoking conversations and so much more.
Hi, I'm Saida Garrett, co-writer of Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mr. Mark Tara.
Today on Rainbow Country, Starwalker, a new Canadian queer film. That and more next. So stay tuned. The Gay Talk Radio right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Harder, porn star, burlesque performer, and the creator of Porn to Be a Star. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
A brand new journey through Rainbow Country, as I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm producer and host, Mark Tara. By the way, Rainbow Country originates from CIUT-FM in Toronto, and now proudly in syndication across Canada. And all of that is thanks to you tuning in, streaming, downloading, but ultimately listening. So today, a spotlight on a new Canadian queer musical film, Starwalker. And here to talk all about it is the film's writer, composer, and director, Corey Payette. We'll find out all about the making of Starwalker and so much more. Plus, in hour two, music from LGBT artists, independent artists, voices that we've come to know and love in classic disco, classic 80s, classic house. And on this episode, I'm featuring some Canadian disco, some queer alternative rock, and more. All that lies ahead as we start this journey through Rainbow Country. And our first stop, the Rainbow Country Bookstore. Today, award-winning writer and author Michael Sadowski reads from his memoir, Men I've Never Been, a book that deals with manhood, sexuality, and conformity.
I didn't have a crush on Mr. Ferrello, my sixth grade teacher, but I really wanted him to like me. and Kevin Rice swooped in on this fact like a bird of prey from day one. A short, scrawny kid with pale skin and a mop of dark brown hair, Kevin was one of the least threatening-looking boys in my class. If he were a dog, he'd have been the runt of the litter. But what Kevin lacked in physical stature, he made up for in intensity of hatred, all of it apparently directed toward me. "Oh, Mr. Ferrello, I know," Kevin mimicked my voice and hand gestures as I answered a question on the first day of school. Then, under his breath, in a sneer I would recognize over the telephone to this day, one more word, faggot. I'd certainly been called names before, and I'd heard the F word muttered by boys in elementary school under circumstances that often made me wonder if it had to do with me. But Kevin's delivery was different. It was bile in it, something primal, diseased, even sexual. It turned me inside out, brought my faggot guts to the surface for all to see. And it was constant, 20, 30, maybe 40 times a day. Compared to Kevin, the boys in elementary school had been mere amateurs. Even if I kept my hand down to avoid Kevin's glare, he found ways to assault my not even formed yet sexuality every day, every hour. We got a lot of group work in Mr. Ferrello's class, which meant a lot of moving around the room and a lot of opportunities for Kevin to sidle up next to me. "You fag, you fucking faggot. You queer, you're a fucking queer faggot." Pretty soon it didn't matter what words Kevin used or what order he put them in. He had me where he wanted me. Now I was much more than the sissy I'd walked into the room determined not to be. I was the class faggot. "Michael, where are your sneakers?" "I'm doing the broad jump, so I thought I could wear shoes today." "No, you may not. Now you just step right over there." Mrs. Finch, my gym teacher, was pointing to an area in the middle of the playground, far from where the whole rest of the fifth grade was standing. "You cannot participate in field day if you're not wearing sneakers." Not looking at any of the other kids, I stepped out of the line and clip-clopped toward the region of social Siberia where Mrs. Finch had ordered me to go. After a minute or two getting everyone dispatched for warm-ups, she left the group to come and deal with me. "Now why don't you have your sneakers?" she asked, in a sigh that reminded me a little bit of my mother's. "I don't know," I mumbled, staring at the ground. "I just forgot them." "You forgot your sneakers? On field day? What are you, some kind of a sissy? You must be." Mrs. Finch let her eyes and her words bore into me for a few more endless seeming seconds. Then, finally done with me, she did a 180 on her kids and turned away. She marched back to kick off the festivities and left me, the field day exile, in the middle of the playground. As I watched her go, I stood stunned for a minute or two. Then I walked over to a high metal stool someone had left alongside the building. I sat down and felt the weight of my heavy leather shoes pulling down on my feet, which didn't quite touch the ground. Soon I heard the faint screech of Mrs. Finch's whistle from the other side of the playground. Field day was starting not 50 yards away on the grassy field across the asphalt from where I sat. But the longer I sat there, the more it all just receded into the distance. The sprints, the broad jump, the kids now part of a world from which I felt completely separate. I was deep inside myself now, Mrs. Finch's words booming over and over in a now familiar echo that filled my head, my chest, my entire body. Right around the corner from the row of bushes where Sheila Feldman had branded me a sissy in first grade, Mrs. Finch had issued the final verdict. 5 years of elementary school, of efforts to cut that word and everything it meant out from inside me, had come down to this. At some point, it felt like hours, but was probably only about 45 minutes, the bell rang. Field day was over. I have no idea who won. In my junior year at Northwestern, I invented another self, and he finished college for me. He had a pretty good run, but there were cracks in his armor, especially when it came to women. The dates he went on all felt prematurely aborted, certainly to him, and no doubt even more so to the women he courted. He made a valiant effort with Natalie, a year behind him in the theater program. Natalie was pretty and sweet, with wide brown eyes and a buoyant air, the perfect casting choice for the role. And she seemed dazzled by his status as an upperclassman who had performed on the Northwestern main stage. Everything went fine on their first date. She even seemed happy with the quick kiss he planted on her lips as he dropped her off in front of her dorm. But as their second date approached, a weight started to bear down on him. He knew a quick peck on the lips at the end of the night was only going to cut it for so long. This wasn't middle school, where going with someone meant holding hands in the hallway between classes and going on the occasional date to the bowling alley. There were expectations. And the usually sunny, I'm nice to everybody Natalie seemed testy by the end of their third date, when the quick peck on the lips was still all he had to deliver. What's wrong with me? She probably wondered. Does he even like me? He wanted to do more, or at least he wanted to want to do more. So he called Natalie to give it another try. He left a message with her roommate. She left a message back, and then he called again and left another message. Message after message, but now they were a week apart instead of just a few days, until it was obvious there wasn't going to be another date. He felt the weight lift off his chest. For at least a few more weeks, until the next eligible potential girlfriend came along, he wouldn't have to go out on any dates at all. And he wouldn't have to wonder what he was going to do when they were over.
If we think of the 1970s as the period where the gay community was trying to get noticed, the 1980s was the time when we actually got noticed and started getting seriously slammed. The cops had never been happy with Trudeau's 1969 decriminalization. If you look at historian Tom Hooper's work, you'll see that arrests of gay men actually increased across the country after decriminalization. Remember, this was way before apps. If you wanted to hook up, baths or bars were the best places to go. So those were the places that police targeted. And there were a series of bath and bar raids in Montreal and Toronto and Edmonton and Ottawa and other cities. The Toronto bath raids of February 5th, 1981 are the most famous. When Toronto's pro-gay mayor John Sewell and the first openly gay candidate for city council, George Hislop, were both defeated in the municipal elections in 1980, the cops figured we were vulnerable and swooped. They smashed into most of the city's gay baths, trashed the places, and arrested almost 300 men on a range of charges. It wasn't just the baths, they were also hassling the bars on concocted liquor license violations, and they were busting individuals and bookstores for porn. Basically, they were trying to shut down the gay village and recriminalize homosexuality. But that night when they hit the baths, they bit off more than they could chew. In Toronto, for the first time, the activists and the small business people and the normally non-political bar and bath patrons all came together in a series of massive demonstrations. We raised money to fight the charges in court and won. We made common cause with Black and South Asian communities who are also experiencing police brutality and harassment, and we demanded community control of the police. We called for changes to the criminal code to get rid of antiquated laws that still criminalize sex. That new community unity also laid the foundation for dealing with the next crisis that was about to affect us all, the AIDS epidemic. This is Tim McCaskill, a gay liberation dinosaur from another planet and author of Queer Progress.
Taking us to our first break, the words and music from the most famous porn film in history. Director Gerard Damiano talks about the legacy of 1972's Deep Throat, along with one of the songs from the film's soundtrack, La La La.
I think it was the first time that anyone ever treated sex openly, honestly, humorously, as though we were doing nothing that we had to be ashamed about. It shows you if you're gay, it's okay to be gay. If you're heterosexual, it's okay to be heterosexual. Whatever it is that you feel like you want to do, whatever it is, don't be ashamed of it. Deep Throat did that.
Star Walker.
Hi, everybody. This is Gino Vannelli. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
About it. I didn't grow up with it. I sometimes wonder if I'd stumble upon my family again. Maybe they're stumbling toward me and we'll just crash into each other one day. Like fate.
My name's Levi.
All my friends call me Star.
Star. So, when are you gonna come and check us out?
Welcome to the House of Borealis!
Is there room for a Anishinaabe princess?
You'll have to meet Mama.
Bring me the child. Star, unless you're gonna perform, I don't know what to do with you.
Levi, honey, make him a pretty girl. These people pay good money for the Borealis experience.
Do we understand each other?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, you know the type. Entranced by flashy lights and no presence at all.
Fix this.
Is it just about the dress, makeup, and hair?
It can be whatever you want it to be.
I want you to soar.
You're beautiful!
Remember, honey, it's not that serious. It's just drag.
Corey Payette, hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I have to say, Corey Payette, thank you for being here, to have your voice, to have your story be heard by the LGBT community and beyond. So thank you for this, especially to talk about your film, a musical, Star Walker. This is an indigiqueer musical drama, essentially, an indigenous queer musical drama. I like to start from the ground and build up. Talk to me about essentially the story that you're telling in Star Walker. What's the story that you're getting at in this musical?
Well, Star Walker's about a two-spirit indigiqueer person who meets the House of Borealis, this fictitious drag house in East Vancouver. And that's where I live, and that's where the story is set. And they're meeting this house and these fabulous queer characters really transforms their entire life. It opens them up to a way of expression and artistic practice that they never knew that they had in them, but also it introduces them to a love and a family and a home that they never knew that they needed. And so it was really like a perfect meeting for them in their life. And I think it's a universal story that many indigenous, queer people who are on the fringes, who are looking for that home, will be able to relate to.
So you write, you direct, you executive produce, you wrote the music, you wrote the lyrics. I think you even like sang the songs or some of them. The idea to make such an ambitious film, the idea to make this film, this musical, where did this idea originate from, to tell this to make a queer musical? Where did this idea come from?
Oh, well, I write musicals. That's what I do. Starwalker is about my fourth or fifth musical that I've written and had produced. It's something that I'm very passionate in. I'm really interested in using music as a tool to express emotions that are beyond words. So really thinking about music being a tool and using it when characters can't speak. So in this case with Star, the lead of the show, there's a lot of that communication that they don't know how to express their emotions. They don't know how to show up for their family and really be the kind of person within this house that supports one another, you know? And so that's a really fantastic opportunity to use music to give Star the moment to express that. And so thinking about music as a tool. And then outside of that is also just, there's so much of this musical that is kind of the behind the scenes look at a drag house and at you know, drag in general. And so really seeing and using the camera to go backstage and to follow performers into their dressing room and into different private conversations. You know, I'm not really a performer anymore or an actor anymore, but back when I started, you know, when I was an actress, I had those when you're running shows and you're doing these kind of performances that are very high energy and there's always, you know, there's always drama backstage and the audience never sees that. And so I felt like capturing that and telling that story was really interesting to me. And then also in addition to that, having the camera be sort of this eye on the wall, sort of like watching and seeing what's going on.
A fly on the wall.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me, and I think something that really created a bit of a dance for the characters, where the camera was a part of that.
The very opening where there's no dialogue, and then that leads into the first musical number. It's very entertaining, really draws you in as a viewer. The opening to this film, Starwalker, was that always the plan to open the film the way that it does?
Yeah, I think the interesting part of it is being able to really create the world of this House of Borealis and start that out where you really understand what people are so excited about. This is East Van, like, you know, Value Village drag. It's not, we're not looking at doing, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race style drag, even though there is like a portion or some of that's present within the film, but it really is about setting it in this place. And, you know, some of the most hilarious, charming, exciting, surprising drag I've seen in community, you know, like in local drag, where you're seeing absurd things happen. You're seeing, you know, really creative and funny and innovative stuff. And so that's really what I wanted to sort of start with and capture right off the bat. And then that is kind of cut between what Star's journey is and the sort of like hookup culture that he's living in, that I also feel like a lot of that is sort of another perspective within the broader queer community.
Because that's essentially what opens the film. You've got, you know, the cityscape and this person walking, and where are they going to, and who are they going to hook up with? I think it's fair to say it's one thing to write a script for, you know, like a movie or something, but you're creating the music, you're writing the lyrics, you're doing all these aspects of this story. So how long did it take you to write Starwalker, like all the elements, the script, the lyrics, the music?
Well, I had the idea for the musical back in like 2016, 2017, but I was actually commissioned to write it as a stage play from a musical stage company in Toronto. I don't know if you know them, but they commissioned it in 2019. And so that's really where I started writing it. And, you know, I started it really from a personal exploration. You know, I've always been two-spirit, and I've wanted a way to express that in my art that kind of helped to have other people understand what that is, you know, because I didn't feel like that was something that was present within, like, certainly not the like, quote-unquote, like, typical gay community, for sure. There wasn't, like, a lot of awareness around that. And so I felt like this story could act as a vehicle to really share a unique perspective of two-spirit people, and also the gifts and the, you know, the things that we have to offer to the community, one of which is the, you know, ceremonies and things surrounding like, you know, community care, basically. And then on top of that was also trying to find a way to express more openly my own queerness. You know, I'm a gay person. I have a husband. I've been gay my whole life. But the...
Go on, girl.
I know, right? But it's like, when people see my other shows, I've had people ask me about my wife. And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, hello? Like, no. But I feel like I've had to come out. Not that I don't think it's ever people who have met me. It's just people who have engaged with my work over the years and just assume that I'm a straight person. And I'm like, girl, you have been like experiencing gay art in all sorts of ways that you have no idea. Like, that it's in there. Everything that I've done has been a part of my, you know, queer expression. Everything I've done has been a part of my Indigenous expression. It's a part of me, right? It's a part of who I am. And I wanted to find a way to tell that story and to get that out there that was more in terms of the, like, forward narrative, that it's like, this is going to be a real celebration of what it means to accept yourself, what it means to find love. You know, so many of the stories that have been out there, you know, when I was growing up of gay people has always been about the coming out story or about the, you know, the abuse or, you know, beatings and violence, which absolutely has a place. And that story needs to be told. And it has been told very well. But I didn't see the love story, you know, the deep affection that happens between queer people, where we are almost like filling out a part of our family, you know, and certainly there are stories that have those elements that I'm talking about. But I really wanted to see a story rooted in joy and in acceptance. And really, it's almost like the coming out story, but what happens next, you know, that it's not just the coming out. It's like, how do you then build a life? How do you then create community and find a way to accept yourself so that you can thrive?
Now that the film is done, would you ever see a time when it's remounted as a musical again on stage?
Anything's possible. You know, I know that these stories, there are so many extraordinary drag queens out there who have so many talents. Like, it's like, you know, it's overflowing. And so I just feel like that's totally possible. And I also see that as my responsibility as a storyteller to put these shows out there, to put these you know, films out there. So to kind of like let people know there are roles for you. There's a space for you. Like, we want you. And there's also some fun songs, you know, that are like, you know, there for you to sing.
Is there a soundtrack?
There is. Yeah.
And is it available?
Not yet, but we're going to be releasing it this year.
Well done. The title, Starwalker, is there a story behind this particular title and choosing it?
Yeah, well, basically, it's really about Star. So in the beginning, it's like it's a name that Star was given as a nickname from his parents, but he's estranged from his parents, and this becomes sort of something that he's known for. It's not meant to be taken literally, but then when he meets the House of Borealis, you know, being called Starwalker is quite a fortuitous thing, and feels like he's kind of meant to be with them. So it has a bunch of resonance around fate, around really kind of meeting people in an unexpected way, and also kind of finding something in yourself that you didn't actually know was exceptional and special, that, you know, others in your family help you to bring out.
And on that note, we'll return after this Rainbow Country update.
I'm Agnes. My new record, Magic Still Exists, is out now. You are listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
This is gay hip-hop artist, the Mangfather Bob Katz. An artist friend of mine recommended that I check out Mark Tara's Rainbow Country years ago, and I've been enjoying it ever since. Mark's excellent interviews highlight all aspects of the LGBTQ community, and he's not afraid to ask the difficult questions that other hosts avoid. And I love, love, love the music that Mark plays on Rainbow Country each week, especially when he plays my music. But seriously, Mark Tara has been such a supporter of my music and has turned me on to so many great LGBTQ artists that I'd never heard of before. I'm so grateful to Mark Tara's Rainbow Country.
If you, or maybe someone you know, would like to be a guest on Rainbow Country to get the word out about an upcoming project, maybe you have an interesting story or journey to share, well, simply head over to marktara.ca, where everything is connected, and send me an email. It's just that simple. And you too can have your voice and your story be heard coast to coast.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station specifically for our issues to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So, support. Tune in. Thank you.
I'm Billy Newton Davis, and we're sitting here on Rainbow Country with the fabulous Mark Tara.
So, Corey Payette, you are you're a director, you're a creator. Your story, the story that you're telling in Starwalker is essentially an indigenous queer story. You were talking earlier about, you know, being part of the LGBT community and being married. For yourself, why is it important for you to tell queer stories? Why is that important for you?
Well, I think that queer stories are, I think we need more voices. When I started writing this musical, it was 2019. And at that time, drag queen story hours weren't being protested. the national report on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit people hadn't yet been released. And it seemed like we were headed in a direction that was about more equality, more space, and a real like a desire to create a community that was really open and free for everyone. Since then, it has been shocking is like the word that comes to mind. It has been shocking, destabilizing to see how the community or the broader community, both here in Canada, but also in the States and around the world, has closed its doors to LGBTQIA plus perspectives and has really made especially trans people and drag artists this like villain in a storyline that we had no part in, you know, that it was never about us. It's like we're used as a tool for some sort of political game. And so when I started writing, it wasn't like that was, you know, that wasn't what I was writing into. But now, and that's where I feel like this film really meets this moment, because there's so much vitriol out there towards Two-Spirit and trans people and drag artists that I feel really paints us in a certain light that I do not feel is reflective of the people that I know. And Starwalker acts as a counter to that. Starwalker is basically putting out a positive, joyful, uplifting message that's about acceptance and love, that maybe if some of those communities who are afraid of us can hear that story and can get behind that message, maybe they'll be less afraid. Maybe they'll be a bit more open. Like the film will hopefully open their hearts and minds to some of these perspectives that for whatever reason have been, you know, really turned dark in recent years. And so when I started writing it, I didn't know that it would have that kind of resonance, and I'm sad that it does, but I also feel that it is the film that many communities need right now.
What are your thoughts on this whole step back, this whole LGBT backlash that's happening currently, especially politically? Like, why do you think this is happening currently? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that everything is, it's like we take, you know, two steps forward, three steps back. And I feel like that pushing towards equality for us is such a beautiful and exciting thing. And then I think for others in different communities, they see that as threatening. And so I think they're using this as a tool. They're using our community as a tool to sort of, craft this narrative that we should be feared.
We are the enemy.
And I think that the only way to combat that, the only way to, it's like you can't really fight back in that same way, you know, trying to then like turn that around on them, but is by sharing stories like this and by never letting, you know, one of the lines in the film is our joy is rebellious. Us continuing to be who we are and who we have always been is a rebellion, you know, because we're breaking those norms and we're saying we're not going backwards. And so that's what, you know, I think that's also what's threatening to some people who are not within our community, is that we are not going back. We are not backing down, and this is going to be what the future looks like, whether people want to accept that or not. But obviously that is a very destabilizing place for people who don't agree, you know, to sit. But we will get there, and we can't give up. And hopefully this film really gives people that joy that they need right now, because I know that in so many communities, there's just a lot of fear and a lot of, uncertainty. And I think that if this film can just let people know, you know, that this sort of safety is there in certain communities, like here in East Van, I think we'll have done our job.
Well said, well said. Okay, so awarded to individuals who have demonstrated exceptional leadership to furthering reconciliation with Indigenous peoples in British Columbia, the BC Award for Reconciliation. In 2021, you, Corey Payette, received the first BC Award for Reconciliation. Congrats on that. Receiving that honor, receiving that award, what does that mean to you?
Oh, it was just such a huge honor. I've been doing this kind of work of trying to build bridges between communities. Recently someone was like, that's very two-spirit of you to like try to be like bringing different communities together. And I do feel that's been my role, and that's been what I have been sent here to do, is to like bring these different communities, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities, together to have conversations, to be inspired by different stories, and then to really sit with one another and say, we're here, what do we have, like how do we work through all of these struggles. And so to receive that kind of award, what that meant to me, in addition to feeling, you know, so proud of the work that I've done, but it just means that I'm on the right track, that I'm reaching people, and that the way that I'm working and the stories that I'm telling are really making a difference. And that's really all that I could hope for.
So Star Walker was part of 2025's Toronto Inside Out LGBT Film Festival. And I'm sure that you'll be doing other film festivals over the next little while. But what's the bigger picture? How will general audiences be able to see Star Walker? Is there a plan in place? Is there a distributor on board as of yet?
No distribution as of yet. We're still, so Inside Out was our huge world premiere on opening day, and it was extraordinary. Like the reception was just thrilling. And then we're basically going to roll it out in film festivals across Turtle Island and around the world. And then really it then comes from who sees the film, who gets inspired, and then maybe that will be taken further through various streams of distribution. But you know, the thing that I know is that these stories and these, you know, the films that I do, they really have a path of their own. They seem to meet the right people. The right people hear about it, and then they connect it with someone else. They're really a call to action. And so I just have to release it, you know, release. And then let it go and let it kind of make its way and find its people, because that's, you know, that has been the history of how my work has gotten out into community.
Making this movie, this musical, telling the story, what's been the most challenging aspect of bringing this to audiences?
Well, I think that a big challenge was just around capacity. One of the stories that I told is when I started writing this. In fact, I had it in development for 2 years under Warner Media. So as part of the, like, it was supposed to be a television series. And so I developed it as a television series and done all this work. It was a full musical as a television series, and they had the rights to it for about a year. And then they dropped it. So it didn't happen there, you know. And that, I think that, well, that setback, it was very disappointing and very sad to know that, okay, this isn't going to happen with them. But what then followed is what I think is, you know, me meeting that disappointment and trying to make something good out of a bad situation. And so in, you know, a couple months, we turned it around and adapted, basically turned that series into a feature film and then went to camera and shot it. So this, what people are seeing in this film is really, I think, an example of artists working in the way that we know how to best. And that's, you know, making something out of nothing, you know, taking a bad situation, a situation that, you know, because in many cases, a lot of films, you know, or series that are, you know, discontinued, they just die that way and no one ever gets to see them. But I think me and my co-producers and everyone who was a part of that recognize that, you know, this story has legs and it needs to be told now more than ever. And so that's where we took it on. But I would say that was definitely the biggest challenge, was just working towards something and then having it completely fall away and having to scramble and rebuild to get to the feature film that we have today.
And what's been the most rewarding part about this project for you?
Well, for me, it's so much a part of these performers, the actors and drag artists and all of the people who the, you know, audience are going to get to meet. It's a lot of people who are, you know, they're not the celebrities, you know, that people will expect in traditional Hollywood feature films. These are people who are cast because of their talent, you know, because of what they have to offer. Their voices, their voices are extraordinary. They're, you know, some of the performers are drag artists, like work in drag and have worked in drag for many years. So you're asking them to put on heels and it is not their first time, you know, like they can dance in heels, they can kick in heels, they can move like some of the best drag queens. And so it's I think it's exciting because audiences don't know them yet, you know, they haven't had a chance to meet them, and I feel like they're about to make an enormous splash, and so that's what I'm most excited for.
So what was the casting process like for this particular project? Like, are these people that you have known? Are they friends of yours? Did you guys put out like a big casting call at one point?
Yeah, everyone was a little bit different. So Dylan Chiblo, who plays Star, I've known Dylan and worked with Dylan for about a decade now. And I actually wrote this show for him, for his voice. And I think you can tell when you hear the music, it's like it fits perfectly with his voice. And that's because that was really important to me to write it and tailor it almost like the most beautiful couture gown, but like musically, right? And so Dylan, I've always known that I wanted him to be Star, but then every other performer, like the Jeff Fallis, who plays Levi, came to us through auditioning, and Mother Borealis, Stuart Adam McKenzie, I saw in another show, Kinky Boots. I don't know if you've heard of Kinky Boots. Mm-hmm. So he was playing the lead in Kinky Boots, and I approached him. So everyone sort of had a little bit of a different way of coming into the project, but it was it certainly was a very like a kind of where you meet people and you don't realize that they're going to click. And then another person who came in is Ralph Escamillan, who I met through the ballroom scene here in Vancouver. So Ralph runs this community organization called Van Vogue Jam, which is a ballroom company that basically hosts balls and competitions here in East Van. And so but also, in addition to having all this ballroom experience, is also a choreographer, is also a performer. And so that was also a kind of a perfect pairing for me and this show was really Ralph, and being able to reflect how this community moves in the film.
So here's my last question for you, and it's simply this. What do you hope audiences come away with after they've seen Starwalker?
Well, for the, you know, two-spirit LGBTQIA+ community, I really hope that they come away with it feeling a great sense of family, of hope, of joy, and a feeling that they're not alone, and that this is, you know, that hopefully this film will act as a bit of a help us to withstand and get through this dark time that it seems like we're all in. And then for people who are not from our community, I really hope that it will serve as an entry point for many different perspectives. You know, the Starwalker, we have so many different people from within the queer community represented. And I think that that's always really important, because the only way that I know that change happens is through, you know, a unique one-to-one connection with whether it's a story or a person, because we're not all the same. You know, all of us have different ways, different histories, different gifts that we bring forward. And I think that sometimes, for people outside of our community, they forget about that. And I think this film will serve as a reminder, you know, of all the ways and the gifts that we bring to the broader public. So that's what I hope they take away.
Well said, well said. I have to say, Corey Payette, well said, well done, well filmed, well made. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show. Very entertaining.
Thank you so much. It's great to meet you.
I don't know much about it. I didn't grow up with it.
I sometimes wonder if I'd stumble upon my family again. Maybe they're stumbling toward me, and we'll just crash into each other one day. Like fate.
My name's Levi.
All my friends call me Star.
Star. So, when are you gonna come and check us out?
Welcome to the House of Borealis!
Is there room for a Anishinaabe princess?
You'll have to meet Mama.
Bring me the child.
Star, unless you're gonna perform, I don't know what to do with you.
Levi, honey, make him a pretty girl. These people pay good money for the Borealis experience.
Do we understand each other?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, you know the type. Entranced by flashy lights and no presence at all.
Fix this.
Is it just about the dress, makeup, and hair?
It can be whatever you want it to be.
I want you to soar.
You're beautiful!
Remember, honey, it's not that serious. It's just drag.
That was my spotlight on the new Canadian queer musical film, Starwalker. For more on this film and its award-winning filmmaker, Corey Payette, simply visit CoreyPayette.com.
Magnus Hirschfeld made the modern homosexual. He co-founded the world's first gay rights group, the Scientific Humanitarian Committee, in Berlin in 1897. But what is far more important is that he and his colleagues came up with an enormously influential concept of what same-sex desire was, what it meant, and how it fit into the wider world. If you think homosexuality is an inborn quality that cannot be changed and has a biological root, but is not an illness, and if you think gay people are a sexual minority who are born that way, and who deserve legal protections just as racial minorities do, you owe those ideas to Hirschfeld and a handful of others. He was among the first to articulate that conceptual model of what it means to be gay in print in 1896.
We just heard professor, author, and historian of queer and trans politics, Lori Marhoefer, reading from Racism and the Making of Gay Rights, a sexologist, his student, and the Empire of Queer Love, their powerful new gay history book, about the man who made the modern homosexual, a German physician and sexologist who died at the age of 67 in 1935, Magnus Hirschfeld.
Hi, I'm Justin Ling, author of Missing from the Village. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
To hour two of Rainbow Country. The track is Getaway Car, featuring Kate Ashley, from the Canadian indie project, Genderfix.